I'm Billy, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 5th, 1990. My home group's a Tell It Like It Is group in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. I'm not going to do a PowerPoint, so don't be worried if anyone saw that. Even in my professional life, death by PowerPoint is a rule of mine, that PowerPoint is just a killer. But I'm grateful to be here, grateful the committee invited me. It's unusual to see this many people in a meeting that has this topic. I feel like I'm at the midnight sex and sobriety panel. Like, they confuse it on the program? Is that why there are so many people here? But I am grateful to be here. There's a lot of time dedicated to this. Lisa's not enough time, but we're going to try to, I'm going to keep a hold of my watch and try to stay at a high level on the traditions and the concepts and basically keep it at a very practical level about what we see in AA today. I'll just plead guilty. You know, my experience is mine. So there's a chance, I'd say one of you, but probably more, are going to walk out that door and are not going to like what I said. Going to really disagree with me, and I just want to tell you that's awesome. The only thing that would be better than you disagreeing with me is you disagreeing with me so much that you went to some AA literature to show me where I was wrong. And then I will gladly admit that I was wrong. There's so many urban myths about the traditions, and I have a short amount of time, like I said, so, but a couple of things I just want to get out of the way is that there is no doubt how important the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are. In fact, I divide the three and always say that the steps are our message, the traditions protect our message, and the concepts perpetuate our message. Keeps it very simple for me. But the traditions are sometimes can be difficult in one's personal life, and I'm not even talking about applying them to your life. I'm talking about just being a member and having friends in Alcoholics Anonymous, and, you know, when do you say something, when do you not say something, but it's really important that we at least first talk about how important they are. We would not be here. None of us would be here. If you listen to speaker tapes, you might know a name, Don P., Aurora, Colorado. He passed away in 2006, I want to say. But, you know, Don was speaking in the 90s at an event, and he was talking about what you'll hear some people talk about, the big book revolution or the big book renaissance. You'll hear those terms come up. And, you know, what people are really talking about is these two old guys, Joe and Charlie, who got together at Al-Anon conventions because their wives were in Al-Anon, and they loved talking about the big book. And then in 1980, when the International Convention was in New Orleans, they did a two-day workshop the 2 days before that convention, and their lives were never the same. They were on the road forever until they passed away. And people talk about how the big book came alive in so many places, but one of the things that Don P. used to talk about is that he loved the big book, whatever you wanted to call it, but that it did worry him about how many first legacy-only members of Alcoholics Anonymous would be running around AA, who only had experience with one of our three sides of our triangle. Because you know how that is when you take somebody through the book, or when you were taken through the book. When you send them loose on the rest of Alcoholics Anonymous, you kind of want to warn everyone else, you know? Like sometimes they're a little bit passionate and a little bit over the top, and, you know, sometimes they go to your meeting and are like, hey, you know, this is nice, but we do the AA like the first 100 did at my big book group, and maybe you should come and... I still run into people today who tell me that maybe there's no reason for the traditions, that all you need is the steps. And I really just, it's not worth fighting, but I do point out two things. Number one, if you're a member of the recovery community, that's awesome. AA shares its message with everybody. And if that's how you identify as a member of the, you know, recovery community, who am I to argue with? But if you're a member of what Bill W. called the Spiritual Society of Alcoholics in Action, well, that's different than the recovery community. As bad as people want to blast me for saying that, the two are not the same. They are similar in nature, but very different. But what I ask people who tell me there's no need for the traditions is, where would you be today if on your sobriety date there was no Alcoholics Anonymous? Like, would you be in the same place you are today? Or anywhere remotely close? Or would you just have naturally healed in whatever process you found to get better? Like, I'm pretty aware, for me, if AA didn't exist the day I last got sober, my life would not be, it would be very, very, very different today, if I would even be fortunate enough to be alive or not denied my physical liberty. And there's only one thing that's kept Alcoholics Anonymous. One thing is probably a little bit of exaggeration, but the most important thing that's kept us here is our traditions. And, you know, sometimes people think that the traditions are a way to be a cop. Or, you know, they're really a way to protect AA from me and you. And a lot of that's a big urban myth out there. We really don't care about the outside world. Their business is their business. And you, if you're not a member of AA, you can't break an AA tradition. So when I hear people say that, oh, this newspaper or this TV program or this, not so. In the early 1950s, you know, you can get a hold of some reel-to-reel tapes, and in a talk that Bill W. gave, talking about why the need for the traditions, I was shocked to hear him say, because, you know, if you're familiar with the 12th step of our program, some of you probably look at it in three parts. A lot of people do, you know, having had a spiritual experience, carrying this message to other alcoholics and practicing these principles in all our affairs, kind of like a 1, 2, 3 or ABC. But Bill W. said in the 50s that one of the top reasons for creating the traditions was that part 3 of step 12, practicing these principles in all our affairs, was that what they had noticed was there was one place especially that alcoholic members of Alcoholics Anonymous were not practicing these principles in all their affairs. And that was in Alcoholics Anonymous. That was very glaring. And, you know, when you come to AA, I'm not judge, jury, and executioner, or whatever your semblance of peace of mind and drama-free life is, and your content in sobriety is for you to figure out, absolutely not for me. But there's some dangers in the steps, and we don't talk about them a lot, but there are. And the danger really is that we take broken people and make them usefully whole. Now, that doesn't sound like a danger. Sounds just like a promise. Like, how could anything bad come from this? But if there was ever a group of people who can take something really good and make it bad, it's alcoholic members of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, our ability to destroy good things is really amazing. Because we give people their entire lives back most of the time. Whatever that looks like for you. The family you lost. The career you lost. What about the career you never had? I mean, I'm one of those people. Now, I can't, because I've said too much that's on recording. But if I was going to the International Convention, which I am in Vancouver in a couple of years, and I had my own stand to sell stuff, I know what I would sell. I would sell a shirt that said, never a cucumber, right? Like, because, you know, we say, you know, once you become a pickle, you can't become a cucumber, but my story is never a cucumber. Like, I've never been a cucumber. Like, I've had that from day one, and I would love to sell those shirts. Never a cucumber. I can't do that for various reasons that I'll get into in a little while. But we all have what we think is our version of peace and contentment. But when you get your life back and you get your brain starting to thinking and things like money, property, and prestige invade it, it's easy to think, you know what? I could take advantage of this AA thing, or I could take advantage of this spiritual living thing, or there must be a way to monetize it, or I could go on in 1,000 different directions. Now, the difficult part is that, unfortunately, and I really want to stress this, that unfortunately in AA, a lot of times the reaction to a tradition's so-called violation is worse than whatever just happened. And that's not good for any of us. Like raising voices, rolled eyes, I could go on and on. How do you correct something with even worse behavior? And the second thing is that enforcement does not work in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know how long everybody here has been sober, but I don't know if you've tried to enforce something with alcoholics. The drinking variety, it absolutely does not work, and we have found out that with the non-drinking variety, even recovered, it does not work. Like, only embracing works. It's like the Big Book. You can scream from the rooftops that, you know, somebody needs to go through the steps, and they need to do this, and they need to read this, and they need this color highlighter, and we're going to use this set of sheets, and you could do all of that you want, but it doesn't work. It doesn't work until the person, if there's anyone new in here, I'll just give you a little bit of bad news about the rest of your life. If you're the kind of new person that's been in and out for a while, okay, here it comes. The people that you've hated the most in Alcoholics Anonymous are going to be the people that you have to reach out to for help. That one kills me still today. Like, I remember when I went to my first Joe and Charlie Big Book workshop, everybody I hated for 100 miles was in that room, in that hotel lobby. Like, everybody at every meeting, every over-the-top, passionate Alcoholics Anonymous member, they were all gathered together in one place. Like, that shouldn't even be allowed. With all their highlighters and their dictionaries and the crazy ones with the 1939 dictionary. You know, we can go to various lengths of crazy in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I think we could all agree on something. And I'm sure some of us have the experience. I'm sure I'm not the only one that has been in a meeting and has heard a new person, somebody maybe not new to AA, but with, you know, very little time, maybe a day or two, share the following. I've been coming to AAs for years and it just won't work. I've been in and out of AA, Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been coming to AA. I've been doing AA and I just can't get sober. I may be one of those people described in How It Works. Maybe I'm the constitutionally incapable person. So I got to believe that I'm not the only one that's ever heard multiple times someone say that in a meeting. And I got to believe that there's probably someone else in this room, like me, probably a bunch, who every once in a while have had a conversation with a person like that after that meeting, in the room, outside in the parking lot, in a Denny's, wherever. And for me, the outcome of that conversation is usually the same. They've been doing a lot of things for a couple of years. Alcoholics Anonymous, not one of them. Like, their definition of doing AA, yeah, very different than one that I know. And I would suggest that probably most of you in this room are no different than me. We may have different ways of doing things, but I would imagine that you would ask that person that we need to get to the literature. Now, I'm not a person who says a sponsor's only job is to take somebody through the 12 steps, because obviously it's to familiarize them with Alcoholics Anonymous, what AA is, what AA is not. But I can tell you that I've had that happen with a young person, a young man, and, you know, I told him the first thing I tell everybody, listen, I'm not going to talk to you until you call your sponsor and preferably see them in person and thank your old sponsor for the time that they took out of their life for you. Like, until that's accomplished, there's nothing I can do for you. I was just taught that a long time ago. Like, if you're in the come bash your old sponsor mode, I'm the wrong person. I'm in the go thank your old sponsor mode, then come talk to me. But a real life situation is this kid that I met who told me he got stuck at the fourth step and couldn't do a fourth step and all this other stuff. I just said, okay, we'll get together, you know, bring your big book. And so I said, okay, where did you leave off in the book? And he said, oh, no, we didn't use the book. And I was like, oh, yeah, I don't know anything about that. Like, I know about the front of the book with the empty white pages, and then you start turning them one at a time, and I'm not here to say that everyone should do it exactly the same, but the literature is where our message is. You know, it's like the most difficult word in the history of vocabulary for Alcoholics Anonymous is that one in the big book that says next. People put a lot after that word. Next year, next century, next week. It doesn't say any of that. It just says next, we do this. But the reason I say that is this. If I say nothing else today, it is impossible to understand and embrace the traditions if you have not read AA Comes of Age. It's impossible. It's a physical, mental, spiritual impossibility. People confuse that book. Now I'm traveling, so I have my electronic books, but the big book is our success story. That's our success story. AA Comes of Age is our documented history of failures for the first basically 10 years of Alcoholics Anonymous, including a little prior to the hit June 10th, 1935. It's a documented failure of our co-founders and our early members and all the tragic mistakes they made. Because, you know, when you go to, you know, I used to have a Sunday night home group. I don't know if anyone else has ever had a Sunday night home group, but there's a big downside of a Sunday night home group. It's because some of you are going to go home to your Sunday night home group, and you're going to be like floating on like some spiritual cloud that you want everyone else to be on, because you just went to the greatest big book retreat or Georgia prepaid or God knows what other AA event. And, like, you're there to just tell everybody how great it was. And so, you know, we all learn to deal with those things in Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, yes, he just came back from the retreat. That's why he cannot be quiet. Or that's why he has a new favorite speaker, right? Just ignore him. But AA Comes of Age, you have to know where our mistakes come from. You have to know why we have these traditions, because if you go to a big book retreat, I could tell you a couple of things you're going to hear. And unfortunately, they're not historically accurate. They're urban myth, Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's not all bad, by the way. We're a storytelling society. We are. We are a storytelling society. I've heard tonight's speaker, she's going to blow this room away. But we're a storytelling society. And the story of our message of hope is perfect. And I'll probably talk a little bit about that in the second hour when we go to the concepts. I am a person that believes our message of hope doesn't need to be tinkered with. It doesn't need to be, it's fine the way it is. But sometimes you can go to a big book event or a history event, and you would think that everything since June 10th, 1935 has been excellent. Or, especially since April of 1939, when the book was published, that things couldn't have been going better. And that's simply not the truth. I mean, AA, its greatest asset is its membership. And its worst asset is the same as its greatest asset, its membership. On any given day, our membership is really good or really not so good. And you know, Bill knew this. He saw the problems that were piling up. I mean, just think about this in your mind. It's like 1946. You have your little piece of AA real estate, wherever that is in the United States or Canada. In 1945, if you had 8 years, that's like standing up tonight with 70. Okay, so let me repeat that. In 1945, if you had 7 years of sobriety, that would be like standing up in the sobriety countdown tonight with 70. There were no old timers. There was nobody with 15 years of sobriety. So that meant that I got to run AA the way I wanted to run AA. That meant maybe it was in my house or it was the building that I picked. That meant that I chose the speakers, I chose the membership rules, and all of a sudden some guy in New York publishes something called The Traditions, which Bill was a genius because they weren't traditional, they were new. But genius to call them The Traditions, right? Genius. Like they've been here forever, but they're really brand new. But when you look back at the history, the biggest pushback across the country, not only were the traditions pushed back across, I mean, against, but Tradition 2. Tradition 2 is what the people running all the groups in AA had a big problem with. That all of a sudden, I'm not in charge. All of a sudden, God's in charge and God exercises God's will through the group conscience and everybody is equal, meaning everybody, meaning the guy I hate, meaning the guy with 2 days, meaning like everybody is equal. But Bill knew how bad things were. You know, in the AA archives in New York City, there's lots of great letters and, you know, two of the greatest letters that I love come from the same city. And they're basically the same letter. Dear Bill, AA's on fire. I'm not going to say where. In our little city, in our state, our group is growing. We're going to the hospital and the detox and the courts. We are on fire with sobriety. And the only problem we have is this other group across the street. We have no idea what's going on there and no idea how anyone is staying sober there. Like 3 weeks after Bill got that letter, he got a letter from the group across the street. It basically said, "Dear Bill, our group is on fire. We're growing and police are dropping off newcomers and we're going to the courts and we're going to the hospital and we're going to the detoxes. The only problem we have is this group across the street." And it's so funny because if you're new, take advantage of it. That's all I could tell you. Because we will just be so happy to see you every day, every week, every month, getting sober. Until we don't like you. Until we start judging you to death. Until we start, you know, you will cross over a line where you don't get that kind of newcomer, everything goes, love. But Bill knew the problems that were out there. You know, and these traditions, you can read them. They talked about, you know, the 12 principles to guarantee AA's future. You know, that's really what they are. And, you know, today I think about it, you know, people say, well, we just need the steps. I don't know about that. Like, what about if there were no traditions or concepts? Because we're all here today. Our number one purpose, I hate to break this to anyone, is not to write new guidelines for your district or your area. It's not to send in new agenda items for the General Service Conference. Like, our number one duty as members of Alcoholics Anonymous today is to make sure we do nothing that keeps the doors closed tomorrow. Like, we have one job. You know, if anyone's been to business school, there's a commercial that came out a long, long time ago, and I hate to show my age, but it came out a long, long time ago, and it was not supposed to be a success. The commercial that was invented was like, they didn't even put a lot of budget money into inventing this commercial. But today, in sales and marketing schools, they teach it all over the place. It had a simple tagline: leave the light on. It was a budget motel company. Leave the light on. And that's our job. We only have one job: that we do not extinguish the flame of Alcoholics Anonymous so that somebody not here today has nowhere to go tomorrow. And that's a pretty big responsibility. We say we live a day at a time, but that does not mean we should be doing things that are going to affect AA negatively. You know, I'm going to go through, because I don't have a lot of time, some of the traditions that I think are really important in the world today. I'll just throw out, if you're new or listening to this recording, get an AA Comes of Age. You probably already have a 12 and 12, and get a Traditions Illustrated. The Traditions Illustrated is probably one of the old one is one of the best pamphlets we've ever had. And it simply explains these traditions in a way that's really easy to grab on. But one of the things it says in Tradition 1 is that basically we only have one tradition. We don't really have 12, we have one. And that's unity. The other 11 are ways to keep and preserve our unity. That's what their purpose is. It's to keep us from destroying our unity. Because at the end of the day, I hate to quote Metallica, but I will, nothing else matters. It doesn't. It's our unity. That is all that matters at the end of the day. And we have disagreements and we get in debates and everything else, but at the end of the day, that exit sign, I know there's a lot of signs in AA meetings. Slogans, signs, all kinds of things. AA, not AA. But that exit sign is probably the most important. Meaning that when you walk out under that sign, whatever group conscience was just passed at your group, district, or area, you're going to embrace. And probably the hardest thing to do is to embrace the ones that don't go my way. That's the hardest thing to do. Like, it didn't go my way, I should work harder at carrying it out. But Tradition 1 is super, super important. Yes, you can't get kicked out of AA. It's a strange organization. That's probably putting it mildly. I mean, there's a piece of literature that has the line, won't all kinds of odd people show up? Well, with a question mark, like it was even a question when they wrote that. Like, we don't need it. We could remove that question mark today in the literature. Yes, all kinds of odd people have shown up. All kinds. But AA unity is number one. And you know, I sometimes, not as often, but I sometimes will go down a rabbit hole on the internet. You ever do that? Like, you know, I know they're wrong, so I'm going to prove them wrong. And even if it takes me 6 hours of Netflix, I'm going to find this, you know? And you know what I've been searching for? Other organizations besides 12-step fellowships that you can't be thrown out of. They don't exist. They just don't exist. Every one of these organizations has something you can be thrown out for. Some have multiple things you can be thrown out for. And I'm talking all organizations, not us. You can act as bad as you want, and you get to keep your AA membership card. However, what's the urban myth about that? You get to keep your AA membership card out in the parking lot. You can be thrown out of a meeting or a group or an AA convention or off some committee because your behavior is interfering with other people's right to be sober. And that's a big thing between step tradition 1 and tradition 12. I love in the traditions illustrated in tradition 12, it has a picture of a building that kind of looks like the GSO building. And on the side of it, it says the spirit of sacrifice. Like, yes, we get our whole lives back. But if somebody told you it was free, they lied to you. There's a big difference between being free and self-supporting. But AA membership comes with a whole host of responsibilities. Being a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous comes with a whole host of responsibilities. And sometimes people struggle with that, that our overall good is more important than any individual member. You know, I talked a little bit about tradition two and the group conscience, and it's hard for people to grasp. It just really is, that the newcomer and the old timer, but this is what's kept us, another urban myth. Especially because I went through my own phase. You know, you ever hear someone say, there is no middle-of-the-road solution. I love that one. It's almost as good as when someone says, I want the program that the first 100 had. And I'm always like, if you're into history, I'm always like, which one of the first 100? One of the ones who died, like a year and a half in, or one of the ones who stayed permanently sober? Like, which one of the first 100 do you really want? Which is kind of like the other one I just said, that we have to be very careful of picking and choosing lines that sound good, because if you know the big book, one of my heroes is Jimmy B. His story is a vicious cycle. If you don't know how important he is, how could I put it in words? He's so important that those little couple of words about believing in God that give you a way out would not be there. They wouldn't be there. Do you know how many times I've heard somebody say that when they first came to AA, they were sitting at a meeting and saw the step shade and saw those couple of words? You know, it's almost like people saying you have to turn your will and your life over to God. It's not what it says. It says the care of God. It doesn't say God. It says care of God. When I had a hard time with God, that was a big relief to me when Joe and Charlie pointed that out, that the care of God was Alcoholics Anonymous for a guy like me. Like, that was the care of God. But the group conscience becomes difficult when it becomes heated, or when things are... And all I can say is a big shout-out. If I was in charge of AA for a day, no big book would be sold without the AA group pamphlet. None of them. Like, that pamphlet is gold. It is pure AA gold. Because what does it tell you in the back of that pamphlet? What is an informed group conscience? It's not a spur-of-the-moment vote. It's not voting without any information. I mean, I don't know, like, I came into AA in my teens in the 80s, so I'm sure there's some other people that were here, and if you were here, especially early 90s AA was interesting, because it was the great smoking debate. So in the early 90s was insanity. Like, this is not an exaggeration. I could leave my Tuesday night meeting, which was filled in smoke, not go to the business meeting, and come back next week, and it would be non-smoking. Now, there was no text at that time. There were pagers you could hold upside down with numbers and write words. What would happen a month later is all the smokers would tell everybody to go to the business meeting, and they would change it back to smoking. But that's not how our group conscience process is supposed to work. Inform group conscience. Now let me talk about tradition three without getting anyone running out the door. First of all, historically, Tradition 3 had nothing to do with other problems. Sometimes in AA today, and in my professional life, we use the words diversity and inclusion all the time. It's super important. But sometimes I get mad at the history deniers in Alcoholics Anonymous on both sides. Tradition 3 is the ultimate AA diversity and inclusion statement. And Bill took a lot of heat for it. This tradition was not about fighting about drugs versus alcohol. I'll get to that later. This tradition was about alcoholics. Now, if you've heard someone say anyone can be a member of AA when they say they are, they've lied to you. The last line or paragraph in the narrative to Tradition 3 is very clear. Any alcoholic is a member when they say they are. Not any person, not any human being. But Bill was worried about alcoholics. Because remember, when these came out in 1946, the world was very different. I'm not judging the world. I'm not making a political statement. I'm giving accurate history as per 1946. In 1946, a lot of our members were not allowed to gather together in public space. That's just a fact. In 1946, it was still illegal to be gay in certain states. Again, no political statement. I'm just describing what was going on in 46. This statement mandated that every person is entitled to be an AA member if they're an alcoholic. It doesn't matter what their race is. It doesn't matter what their religion is. It doesn't matter if they don't believe in God. It doesn't matter if they're pro-choice or pro-life, or pro-gun or anti-gun. And as I love to say, it doesn't even matter if you're a Boston Red Sox fan. It doesn't. All that matters is, are you an alcoholic who needs help? Period. That's it. Now, I will go a little further because it is 2023. And I will go to the AA group pamphlet again in the section on tradition, on membership and open and closed meetings and some things that are sometimes people want to ignore like they're not there. But I know on page 18, it says clearly that Alcoholics Anonymous only has experience with sobriety from alcohol. It does not hint or suggest, those are their words, not mine, hint or suggest that it has the solution to other problems, including drug addiction. Now, let me say it very clearly here. I'm not a person for throwing people out of AA. And I'm not telling anyone who has another problem that they don't belong in AA. I don't care if that other problem is drug addiction or gambling addiction or codependency or anything. It's just that one of them has to be alcoholism. Again, I'll go back to quote Metallica, nothing else matters. I am sure there's not a person in here, unless this is the first time I've ever raised this question, that there's somebody here who has no other problems. Is that person finally here? Because I've been searching for them. I'm awfully jealous of them. Not one single other problem in their life. The thing is, it has nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. See, at Alcoholics Anonymous, no matter what other problems I might have when I'm an AA, I'm an alcoholic. I don't talk about any other fellowship. I don't talk about my experience with that fellowship or problem. And the big book is clear, and because it's 2023, I want to make sure I get this point across. And it's not without experience. Some of you may know that there's on the AA board, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but there's such things as called a Class A trustee. It's a non-alcoholic, an amateur, we call them, right? I was a Class B trustee. After I rotated off the board, I got to be a Class A in another 12-step fellowship. I was a non-heroin addict member of the HA board. And it opened my eyes completely. And again, if I'm not here because I work in the treatment industry or the recovery industry, I'm here as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't work in that industry, but I know that what we believe and what they believe sometimes are very different. So if you're expecting me, and I know during the pandemic when there was everything in its world to do with AA on Zoom, there was like good TV and bad TV. There was good AA and bad AA, you know, depending on the channel you changed. But one night there was a thing called the New Doctor's Opinion. And I had to go to it. I said, oh, I got to watch this. There was like 1,000 people there. And this gentleman said that alcoholism, drug addiction, codependency, gambling, food, sex addiction, all the same. And I sat there just devastated, like the death sentence that he just pronounced on a whole bunch of people. Like, we don't believe everything is the same in Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't have an opinion on that. Our book does say that if you practice the principles, the steps, other problems may go away. That's my experience. I'm sure some of you have that experience. But let me tell you when it doesn't go away. I know what it's like to sit down with a man in a diner who looks at me with 8 years of sobriety and tells me that the day before he just forged his wife's signature on a second mortgage application because he's tens of thousands of dollars in debt due to sports betting. Like, I know what that's like. And I'm not a person to be, you know, you don't need to be sarcastic when you're dealing with someone who's dying of something like that. It's not, should I have just said, hey, how's AA working for that? You know, working good? No, but my only message to him was, listen, you need to go to GA right away. You're dying. You need to get to Gamblers Anonymous. Because there are some problems that people have that don't go away as a result of the steps. So when you hear people say, don't go to a therapist, run. Just run away from them. Just turn around and run. If you hear somebody who is not a doctor tell you to stop taking medicine, run away from them and report them. I don't care that they're in AA. It is illegal to take people off medicine if you are not of equal status of the physician that put you on. Period. I go by the Billy Rule. You know what the Billy Rule is? I'll tell you the Billy Rule. I didn't even know a Billy Rule existed. But a guy I hated in AA explained it to me. He said, I thought you said last week your license was suspended. I said, my license is suspended. He said, but you drove here tonight. I said, I know. I needed to go to a meeting. He said, oh, we don't do that. And I was like, we don't do what? He said, yeah, we don't drive with suspended licenses in Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, believe it or not, we've come to the conclusion that we are subject to the same laws as everyone else. It doesn't say 55 miles an hour except for Billy. It does not say no right on red except for Billy. It doesn't say any of that. And so I don't know why we apply sometimes our own rules against laws that exist for a very good reason. And I'm not telling everyone to get on medicine either. I'm telling you to have a good doctor who knows you're getting sober, who's familiar with your life plan and the 12 steps. Like, I know those doctors. I know psychiatrists. I know one very well at Harvard who, before he gets down to any business with his patients that are alcoholic, asks them, when's the last time you went to a meeting? When do you talk to your sponsor? And what steps are you currently working? Because if you're not doing that, I can't help you. But when you've sponsored somebody who's chronic, manic, depressant, bipolar, yeah, you realize your only job is to ask them if they are taking their medicine. Right? You know what that's like. And all of us, and that's what my point is, all of us have other problems. It's none of my business. I think a lot of us would admit, if we were entirely honest, that at certain times in sobriety, 5 years, double digit or whatever, you've caught yourself in the mirror and you've said to yourself, wow, how did I even survive drinking? I'm completely out of my mind sober. Like, how did I even have a shot in the world drinking? Like, I think a lot of us would admit we've been there. But just like the gambling, I got tired of seeing people die in a heroin overdoses in my Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we like to blame everybody else in AA. We like to blame the treatment world. We like to blame counselors. We like to blame everybody else. No, it's not their problem or their fault. The fault is the long-term member of Alcoholics Anonymous who is sponsoring non-alcoholics. That's the death sentence. The death sentence is an alcoholic thinking that because they had a spiritual experience as a result of the 12 steps, that they can save everybody. I don't have my big book with me, except on my iPad, but Dr. Bob talks about this in the foreword to the second edition. It says right there in black and white, this physician, meaning Dr. Bob, had tried spiritual means or whatever to help him with his drinking, but they failed. It was not until this broker, Bill W., showed him the hopelessness of alcoholism that he got the courage to do what he needed to do. See, it's a spiritual law that existed long before AA existed. The hopeless can only be helped by someone who has equally been as hopeless. The regular world hates to hear that. You know, in my regular life, besides Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm very involved with the homeless. And I don't even use, I use the term people who are suffering, the homeless condition. I don't label people as homeless to me. But only somebody who's been equally that hopeless can help somebody. The first 164 pages of the Big Book, which we love to throw around a lot, the steps are really from the front of the book until the end of Working with Others, which in the current fourth edition, I want to say, is like page 103 or 104. So let's call it 120 pages with the preface, forewords, and doctor's opinion, Roman numerals. The first 50 pages are about drinking, are about identification. Because I don't know about anyone else, but I talked to a decent amount of people. Like, did anyone want to do the work that was asked of them when they came to Alcoholics Anonymous? You don't even need to open the book. Just look in the front of the wall. You don't even have to get that far down the list. I mean, quickly, God is talked about. Quickly. Inventory, I didn't even know what really that meant in an AA kind of way. But I knew what amends meant and, you know, that stuff. Like, I mean, it's not a good recipe for a fun day when you're new. Oh, yeah, welcome. Yeah, in a couple of weeks, we're going to have you write like a report, like at school. It's going to be basically about everything that's wrong with you and how you are the cause of your own problems. And then once we get past that, we're going to actually have you sit down with everybody that you hate, and we're going to have you make amends to them, even if they owe you an amends. Like, there's nothing good about that for a newcomer. Nothing. That's why compassion hasn't gone out of order. Like, it's not out of style to be compassionate. But the newcomer needs identification to know they're hopeless enough to do the work in the book. Again, I am not talking about people that are alcoholic. But I see lots of AA members with time sponsoring non-alcoholics or telling people it doesn't matter. All I could plead you to do, I don't use HA because I serve there. I only use it because they have an equal to our grapevine. It's called the main line. Like, Google Heroin Anonymous World Services, and theirs is online, and read those stories. Read about the men and women who were dying of heroin addiction, sitting in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, not identifying. See, because if you believe what the outside world tells you, if you're a heroin addict, you're an alcoholic. If you're a sugar addict, you're an alcoholic. If you're an alcoholic, you're a drug addict. It's just not true. Sure, tons of people are both. There's lots of people who are both. I would say in the people that I come into contact with, I run into more people who are alcoholic who are drug users, not really drug addicts. But I have tons of friends and sponsees who are drug addicts and alcoholics. But they're both. If you're not both and you're not alcoholic, you're not going to identify in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the figures are devastating. You are playing with someone's life. I know that if I drink, I could die. But if you're not aware of, like, how deadly fentanyl and opiates are, like, it's not like you get a couple of nights out drinking before you die or you get to, like, the chances of something catastrophically fatal happening that day are over the top. And I don't know where in our book it says that we sponsor people who are not alcoholic. So I just can't stress that enough in today's world. I'm sick of going into clubhouses and seeing memorial signs up on the board for a person who I know didn't drink, told me they didn't drink, shared in the meeting they didn't drink, but yet some member with time wants to sponsor them. Tradition 4 is probably the most abused tradition in all of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's probably not even a guess of mine. It definitely is. Anytime you hear Tradition 4 or the word autonomy mentioned, one or a couple of the other traditions are going to be run over with a truck. So I just want to stress this about Tradition 4. It does not apply to the other 11 traditions. It never has. It was never supposed to. It applies to local customs with a C, not traditions with a T. What's a local custom? It's something you, when we talked about your group conscience, have authority over. I don't know how many home groups are represented in this room, but let's say a few of us went home this week and we decided that we were going to have a big vote on Wednesday night. Mine would be Friday morning. We're going to take a vote. We've decided to move the 2025 International Convention from Vancouver to Honolulu, because that's where we want it to be. And we're going to send a letter to GSO and say, just so you know, yeah, our Friday night morning meeting, yeah, we've moved it. Start making the plans for Honolulu right away. How preposterous does that sound? Well, what about groups that change the literature on their own? Why is that not preposterous? Why doesn't that sound just as incredibly tragic? Like, your group doesn't have the authority to change literature. Your group has the authority to decide between Earl Grey tea and English breakfast. Your group has the authority to decide whether you're a big book meeting, you know, a step meeting, a speaker meeting. Your group gets to decide what time you meet and what day, but you don't get to change the literature all on your own. Anything, including the blue cards. People have added their definitions of open and closed meetings. Open meetings have become meetings of All Addictions Anonymous. That was never the purpose of an open meeting. Open meetings are where we put Alcoholics Anonymous on display. That's where we show AA to the outside world. In conference-approved literature, it says that only alcoholics participate at open meetings. Non-alcoholics may participate as observers. And by the way, not my definition of an observer. Because my definition of an observer is I get to observe until somebody's doing something wrong, and then I get to speak and correct you. It doesn't say that there either. It just says observer. Closed meetings are for two kinds of people. The literature is very clear. Alcoholics, type one, person who's allowed at a closed meeting. Type two is people who have a desire to stop drinking and a drinking problem. You have to have both. That's what it says in our literature. But we see people using tradition four for all kinds of things. I would point out this. Autonomy is not mentioned in the long form. In fact, it starts out by telling you with respect to its own affairs. Each AA group should be responsible to no other authority than its own group conscience. Its own affairs. Literature is not your affair. Where the International Convention is not your affair. Creating dual-purpose meetings. If I say anything different than is but what's said at any other meeting here this weekend, they could be right. Maybe I'm wrong. I can just tell you what I've been brought up with and what the literature tells me. There's no such thing as a double winners meeting, and I say that as the son of a proud Al-Anon mother. There's no such thing. There's an Al-Anon meeting or there's an AA meeting. There might be an AA meeting with Al-Anon participation or an Al-Anon convention with AA participation, but we don't have dual meetings. We don't have NA and AA meetings combined. It wouldn't work in either sets of fellowships. And I love Al-Anon. I mean, you're looking at people in AA say all the time, there's nothing worse than a belly full of booze and a head full of AA. That's not my story. My story is there's nothing worse than a belly full of booze and my mother's head full with Al-Anon. Like, that is a much worse, I assure you. It is so much worse. You know, there's somebody here who told me something a long time ago. Like, for an Al-Anon member that's a member of AA, one of the greatest compliments they can get is running into someone who's known them for years in one fellowship and says, hey, I had no idea you were in that other fellowship. Like, they're two separate fellowships. Tradition 5, the long form, each Alcoholics Anonymous group ought to be a spiritual entity, but having one primary purpose, that of carrying the message to the alcoholics who still suffer. That's what we do here. That's all we do. Now, do we have special purpose meetings? Yes. All kinds. Men's. Women. Doctors. Gay. Gay, lesbian, bi, transgender. Atheist, agnostic, young people. I could go on and on. Oh, I think cancer survivors now. I'm not here to say or be any kind of rigid lunatic AA Taliban that those are bad. I'm not saying that. I'm saying what it says in the AA group pamphlet. You can be the greatest men's AA meeting or group in the world. But if a woman shows up who's dying of alcoholism and needs a meeting and you turn her away, stop calling yourself an AA group. That's what it says in the AA group pamphlet. We can have all these kind of specialized meetings as long as no alcoholic is ever turned away. Now, we're not talking about me with 33 years because I've always wanted to be the fly on the wall in a women's meeting, right? Like, a little common sense, which is not common in Alcoholics Anonymous, like, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the person out of town whose parent just died and is going to the funeral who shows up at a meeting. We're talking about the new person whose life is in jeopardy. We don't turn those people away from meetings. We let them in. And the other thing is, just because the meeting might have a special purpose does not mean we talk about things other than our solution. We still have the same solution. We still talk about things based on our literature. Tradition 6 and 7, we're in some difficult times in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not here to be an alarmist. Listen, I came here at 14 years old in black engineer boots with a Ozzy Osbourne oil painting on the back of my dungaree jacket, Levi dungarees, a corduroys, and a pack of Marlboro Reds. That's how I showed up to Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I didn't get sober for almost 9 years. Like, I did not come here a rule follower. I did not come here. In fact, I hated Alcoholics Anonymous. We have some challenges. I travel a lot for work. I've been going to some of the same cities for 25 years. I know where to go to a morning meeting, where to go to a night meeting, but I like to go to morning meetings. Like, we are in the middle of destroying ourselves, for sure, financially. There's no doubt about it. Like, I would say 75% of the cities I travel now, the meeting I used to go to is now in the directory twice. Once on Zoom, once in person. Like, I'm not here to say I'm against online meetings or I'm only for in-person meetings, but we got to get our act together. We have now not divided. We've divided and cut into pizza slices the AA budget. You know, a friend of mine, you know, got a call and their sponsee didn't like what they said to him because they don't like what their local intergroup is doing. And my friend said to him, it's none of your business. You belong to a group 800 miles away. You're not a home group member where you live. You don't have a vote as to how your district goes or your intergroup goes or your area goes. You know, and I get real worried because as a big supporter of technology, which I have been for a long time, and I know we've needed it, I also see the downsides. Those of us in-person AA, you know, we kind of were raised that we send some of our money to district and some of our money to area and some of our money to the General Service Board of New York and some of our money, you know, to the intergroup. Yeah, well, if you go on the online intergroup website, no, it just says send all your money here. One place. That's it. You go on the online intergroup website, the Seventh Tradition section, yeah, there's just instructions on how to send money one place. So now our districts and our areas and our intergroups are all missing all this Seventh Tradition. And what are we going to do in the future about it? Again, I'm not anti-technology. I think people have heard me say it. To me, COVID is the greatest kick in the ass AA ever needed regarding technology. We needed a kick in the ass. We weren't using it. We weren't using it to go into correctional facilities. We weren't using it for people shut in at home. We weren't using it in so many ways because we were scared. Because it didn't fit into our little perfect little AA box. And then the pandemic happened and boom, that box blew up. But now there's a good percentage of Alcoholics Anonymous that has not returned to in-person AA, which that's their choice. But what are we going to do about it financially? And we need to take a look at the long form of the seventh tradition. The AA groups themselves, so the AA groups should be fully self-supported by the voluntary contributions of their, T-H-E-I-R, their own members. That's a strong statement. Because we've become a meeting-based society where we just throw a couple of dollars in each basket that comes by us. The pandemic's been great for this too, because now groups take electronic contributions. AA was like the only organization left in the world that wanted to get paid but cared how they got paid, right? I mean, you ever go out to a good old restaurant and there's like six stickers on the front? They take Diners Club, American Express, Visa, MasterCard. Not AA. You know, bring us your rolled quarters and your pennies and send us a check, but we're definitely not going to take money from you electronically. And thank God the General Service Board changed that in 2010. But many areas and districts and groups up until the pandemic still didn't take electronic contributions. Which, thank God we have them now, because it allows us to be a real group member. If someone asked me this question, and again, I tell people this all the time. How you do AA? None of my business. How you sponsor? None of my business. How you view the steps? None of my business. Until you ask me for help. If you invite me in, it becomes my business. So when people ask me questions about the seventh tradition and invite me in, I give them the same answer. Like, all I ask is that for 1 month, just 1 month, I'm sure some of you have ran into someone that's in Debtors Anonymous. You can always tell the new people in Debtors Anonymous because they write down every single thing they spend money on. You know, all I would ask you is for 1 month, keep track of every dollar you put in an AA basket. That's it. And what basket it was. And at the end of that month, I don't really care if you didn't even have money to put in any basket. That's none of my business. But if you did put money in AA baskets, I just want to know what percentage went to your home group and what percentage went to other groups or meetings. Like, if you're like me when I first paid attention to this, less than 50% of my monthly contribution to Alcoholics Anonymous was going to my home group. It was all going to other meetings I went to. And I've had to readjust that. I kind of look at it, you know, we got rid of the word donation in AA. We actually have an advisory action that says we replace the word donation with contribution. We don't take donations in AA. There's a big difference between a contribution and a donation. Donations are for charities like what I give to the soup kitchen and the rescue pet place. Like, I'm self-supporting member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I contribute. It's kind of like my taxes. In April of 2020, I filed a tax extension during COVID, and in October, my accountant called me, said, "Billy, we got to pay your taxes." So I just want to be clear for those that think there's not a difference between donation and contribution. I do not donate to the United States Internal Revenue Service. They're not on my donation list, okay? They're not my go-to give some extra money to. I contributed. Wells Fargo holds the mortgage on my house. They're not on my donation list either. I contribute. You know, and believe it or not, I never knew that my parents were kind of teaching me about this, because I love my mom and dad. They're passed away now, but they were tragically not prepared to be parents. Let's just call it that. and they did the best they could with what they had. But somewhere along the line, someone taught my mom and dad that when you visit someone's house the first time or on a special occasion, you bring something. Now, if I told you the rest of the way we lived, that would seem bizarre, but somehow they learned that. From my dad, he always brought alcohol to somebody's house. You switched over, right? Okay. Good to go? My timing was right. My dad always brought alcohol. My mom, an Entenmann's cake, if you know what that is. It's a budget bakery in the Northeast. And she went to the thrift store where you got the expired dates, my mother, for God's sakes. But we were taught that. And if you came to my house, good to go? My timing was right. My dad always brought alcohol. My mom, an Entenmann's cake, if you know what that is. It's a budget bakery in the Northeast. And she went to the thrift store where you got the expired dates, my mother, for God's sakes. But we were taught that. And if you came to my house and brought a gift, I would say thank you. I'd say thanks. I would not give you a bill for a quarter of the electric bill or one day's worth of electric. I would not tell you you had to do dishes. You might volunteer to do them, but I wouldn't tell you you had to. Because it's my house. It's my responsibility to take care of. When I go to a meeting that's not my home group and I put a dollar or two in a basket, that's my Entenmann's cake from my mother. That's my just being a decent guest. That's my just having some respect. But it's not what I put in my home group. Like, unfortunately, we have too many meetings and not enough groups in Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's a big difference between groups and meetings. And it seems like in Sponsorship 101, people are forgetting to teach people about that. A meeting is just what happens between preamble to prayer. It doesn't exist afterwards. A group, what we do when we're not meeting is more important than when we're meeting. Our connection to AA as a whole, taking meetings into institutions or hospitals or doing PI work. You know, somebody gave a great example of using prayer, and I don't really care how your meeting starts or finishes, not my business, but for my example, the meeting starts with the Serenity Prayer and ends with the Lord's Prayer. And someone gave a great example saying that the quality of a meeting you can judge between Serenity Prayer and Lord's Prayer. But the quality of a group you judge between the Lord's Prayer and the Serenity Prayer. And, you know, we have people throwing dollars in all kinds of baskets. And every time somebody, you know, a resentment in a coffee pot is a myth. It's not a spiritual principle. Sometimes the new groups and meetings need to be started, yes. But I'm going to guess, based on where I am, sometimes I'll say it like, I'm going to guess someone else has been overnight in a place you were not allowed to leave, right? At least one night in your life. Like, there's a few of us in here, right? And I'm going to guess there's a few of us who have probably been divorced in this room. Since we know our audience. When you divide a unit's existence into two, and instead of having one group of expenses, there are now two, how are our intergroups and our districts and our service structures and our areas going to survive? Now you're going to buy two cakes for anniversary night and two rents and two cookie and coffee bills every week, and I could go on and on and on. Like, when we create new meetings, we're messing with the seventh tradition in a huge way. I'm not saying, I don't technically really like the word violation, But I'll tell you this. The percentage of groups that contribute is not a high number. And I don't blame them. They don't have extra money. If you keep dividing up the AA budget by the amount of people who can put money in that basket, there's not going to be enough money. And I'm not here that AA is about money, but our inner groups, our central offices, our districts, that's the boots on the ground. That's the front lines of Alcoholics Anonymous. Our area and our office and our structure in New York, we need them. We can't do without them. People think, oh, we don't need a general service office. Yes, we do. You obviously haven't read your history then. We don't take other people's money, and the last thing I'll say about this is this. There used to be this guy at this anniversary meeting I went to. I loved the way he explained it. And he did it in a very unofficial AA way. On anniversary night, when he was the chairperson, and there were lots of like mothers and fathers and daughters and brothers and husbands and wives, he would say, I want to welcome all the families. And for the first time in your life, they don't want your money. I know that whoever you're here with has been sucking you dry for years, if not decades. Stealing from you, spending, God knows what. Not here. We don't take other people's money. We're fully self-supporting by our own contributions. So, I'm going to talk about two traditions and then switch to the concepts, but I hate to even acknowledge that we're almost in an election year. So let's talk about Tradition 10 and get it out of the way. No AA group or member, I just want to read that. It's not the short form, it's the long form. No AA group or member should ever, in such a way, implicate AA, express any opinion on outside controversial issues, particularly those of politics, alcohol reform, or sectarian religion. It's the Thanksgiving family rule. That's what it is. It's what not to talk about at Thanksgiving dinner, because we can't handle it. Now, there's one person here from a meeting I used to go to in Georgia. It was a great example one day. It was a day after a presidential primary. Somebody started off the sharing by complaining about all the candidates the night before and what they were lacking. And, of course, that bled over into a second and third share until this brave woman raised her hand and said, I want anyone new here to know we don't talk about that here. We keep that outside of AA. And it was amazing to me that a couple other people then followed suit, and after the meeting, a young man new to AA approached a couple of people and said, you know, I'm really glad you said that. I didn't know if it was safe for me to come back here. I didn't know if I was welcome here. Like, I know it's going to sound like I'm a heretic, but it doesn't matter. Like, keep the baseball hats at home during election season. Keep the pins home. Keep the talking about political issues out of the meetings. Like, lives are on the line. And I have a spiritual agreement with the God of my understanding. It means even if you disagree on every single social issue, if you need help, I don't get to say no. But more importantly than that, I also don't do anything to make you feel like you don't belong here. See, sometimes we forget that these traditions are about the newcomer. They're about keeping the door open and making sure that AA is AA. So religion, we don't talk about. Politics, we don't talk about. Alcohol reform, we don't talk about. But we've had a couple of difficult years in our country, one might say. It doesn't matter what party or what you believe in. I think we can all agree that for the last 10 or 15 years, things have become pretty extreme. And it's bled into Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's ugly. And it causes big rifts and resentments. And it causes the newcomer to believe that we believe in something as an organization when we most certainly do not. And so it's super important. The other day I was at a meeting when someone made a non-AA announcement. This blew my mind. During the non-AA announcement time, they said, just want to let everyone know, there's a new, I won't say the religion-based AA meeting. Well, there's no such thing as that religion-based AA meeting. Like, I think we can all agree, like, the book says maybe you'll return to the church you were raised in. Maybe you'll go somewhere else, and that's amazing. But keep it outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't let it bleed in. Don't be it why one person decides they don't want to stay here. Anonymity. Wow. 2023. I don't know. Has anyone else seen like a ton of Roman numerals on Facebook every time it's someone's anniversary? In the public wall setting? Like, we act like we only have one anonymity tradition and it's the wrong one. Tradition 11 is our public relations policy, not even our anonymity tradition. Tradition 11 is our public relations policy that we keep things away from press, radio, and film. And again, another reminder, I'm just explaining. If you do something different, friends of mine do, it's okay. But I'll go by the literature. If I'm being recorded, I do not say my last name. Period. That's what it says. That's what it says in the guidelines for AA roundups and conventions. It says, if you are being recorded. And I just was joking with a friend last night about maybe something not so spiritual I said to somebody recently. Because they came at me and they were like, I can't believe that you have these things on YouTube. I'm like, I can't believe that you're stupid enough that you think I posted them there. Like, I'm not posting anything on YouTube. I could care less what is there. But I also can't be arrogant enough that if I said my last name today to think that someone wouldn't post it there. Like, my last name, that's why the guidelines on conventions roundup says if you're being recorded, don't say your last name. Of course I know that Dr. Bob said being too anonymous is worse than being, you know, not anonymous at all. I know that. I have no problem with people knowing my last name in Alcoholics Anonymous. But not when I'm being recorded, because it will reach the level of press, radio, and film. And social media is just a cesspool. Some good, some bad. But I'm dating myself. Like, I started flying for business when I had a pager. And then I had the small BlackBerry with no phone capability. I don't know if you knew that one. And then I felt important at work because I got the bigger BlackBerry that was like this big. So I've traveled on airlines. You know what just kills me? I never got to smoke on a plane. I missed that by a couple of years. But I've traveled without Wi-Fi. Meaning it didn't exist in the world. There was no such thing. Meaning when you went to a hotel, you went to the closet, and hanging on a hanger was a cable that you plugged in to this thing called a modem. So I lived through that. I lived through Wi-Fi, but not in airports or planes. I lived through Wi-Fi in airports, but not on planes. Now Wi-Fi on planes. And the reason I say that is because sometimes I used to take off from Atlanta And Facebook has this thing where you can say, oh, I'm checking in at Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport, right? And then it automatically says, where are you going, Billy? Oh, going to LAX. Oh, puts that right up there. That's all I put there. Nothing else. No Wi-Fi for 6 hours. Then I land. Hey, Billy, how long are you going to be in AA? How long are you going to be in LA? Where are you staying? Usually within the top five, what meeting are you going to? Going to a meeting tonight? Like all my suggestion about anonymity and social media is, it's not the one sentence you write. It's the aggregate of information that's going up there. You know, and anonymity is not about us being ashamed we're alcoholic. I want to stress that. Anonymity is about being a real alcoholic as described in the Big Book. We are not wired to be famous for being sober. It's not in our DNA. Maybe it works for the social drinker or the heavy drinker or God knows what else, but not the real alcoholic. We don't want AA's reputation to be based on any individual AA member. We want AA's reputation to be out there. And there's been horrible tragedies documented over the time AA has existed of people who think they're immune to this. Or people who have this thing, oh, we got to get rid of the stigma. Well, the stigma is going to be there for a long time. And an organization can do it. We don't need to do it as individuals. You know, I got asked, there's a treatment center that has a facility for what they call C-suite executives. And a couple of years ago, I got asked to be the speaker of their alumni gathering. And, you know, I had to think about it, and I finally declined, you know. Like, inside my industry, everyone knows I don't drink. Some know why. I get calls all the time from people who need help. But I don't need the poster. I don't need to be the poster child for recovery in my industry. I don't need to be known for that. You know, anonymity is about protecting the alcoholic and their ego. And they don't convince themselves that they know better than everyone else. So I'm going to stop there about the traditions, because at a high level, I told them I would do this, talk about the concepts at a real high level. Because I'm sure there's some people here who have no experience with them at all. And I'll take a couple of questions and I'll just repeat them in the microphone. But if you've never dealt with the concepts, this will be like freshman orientation day. It will not be deep into the concepts. But there's a lot of people here who maybe have never heard of them or dealt with them. So rule number one, you can't understand the concepts unless someone has taken you through the traditions. It's impossible. You have to have experience with the traditions. Rule number two, you have to know what the conference charter is. If you don't know what the conference charter is, you can't understand the concepts. The conference charter is like the Declaration of Independence, and the concepts are like the Bill of Rights, but that Declaration of Independence is so important that Bill knew Dr. Bob was going to die. They started the General Service Conference in 1951. It was a test for 4 years. In 1955 was the first real one. That's also when they had the International Convention in St. Louis. That's also when they said AA came of age. AA came of age. That's what the book is named after. But don't let anyone fool you. I'll get in trouble because someone will listen to this tape. I'll deal with it. The most important thing I could tell you about my general service career is that I'm the past GSR of the Westside Young People's Group in New York City. I happen to have held a few other positions. Some of them are area chair, alternate delegate, delegate, corrections chair, DCM. I've been an appointed committee member of the Trustees Corrections Committee at GSO. I've been a director on the AA World Services Board for 4 years. I've been a Class B trustee for 4 years, and twice I've served as the chair of the AA World Services Board. I don't tell you that to impress you. I tell you that it gives me some experience. Not doesn't mean better. Sometimes horrific. People ask me, what's it like to be the chair of AA World Services? Well, some days it's the greatest job in the world, and some days you wake up and you want to jump out your window, right? That's what it's like, okay? If you wanted to know what it's like, that's what it's like. But sometimes there's a spiritual disease in service that we don't talk about. And there are some other, because I'm really proud to be the past GSR of the Westside Young People's Group. But if you go to a gathering of past anythings, no one says they're a past GSR. Say you're a past delegate, like I would, you know. I'm a panel 49. I like to think I was in kindergarten. That's 1999, right? You're not going to run into a lot of people with a panel 4 number anymore. But I'm a panel 49 delegate. I'm a past general service trustee. And sometimes, as it goes, other people who currently or used to hold those positions don't like what I'm going to say. I accept it. There is a spiritual illness that runs in service. There's a couple of them. And that's why it's so important to know the concepts in the conference charter. There is one illness that the further down the triangle, upside down, you go, your head starts telling you that you know better than everyone else. Your head starts telling you that, oh, that's why they elected me. I know better than the groups. I know better than the areas. I know better than the districts. That's a bad spiritual illness. I would call it arrogance. The other illness in AA service is that we try to go around and tell people we need lots of people involved in service. We need more people. Because we do. But then you show up and you commit a Class A AA service felony, which is you showed up with a new idea. How dare you? Like, I wouldn't ask you that I needed you to help and I wanted your new ideas. I just wanted you to come and do it the way I do it. You know, in the steps, we talk about Rule 62 all the time, but we don't talk about Rule 63. Well, welcome to AA service, Rule 63, which is this is the way we've always done it. Like, our job as past or current leaders is to be cheerleaders for new people involved in service. That's our job. Our job is also to never forget that the groups are in charge. Period. There's so much bad information going around. We have a concept study online. If you want to go, come see me. It's on Sunday nights at 8:30. There's so much bad information going around about general service right now. And it drives me crazy. The conference charter is clear. I'll quote it. Regardless of the board's legal prerogative, regardless. There is no situation. I've been a member of the General Service Board, which meant that I was an owner of the Grapevine, an owner of AAWS, an owner of the General Service Board, Inc. That sounds very legal and technical, but I'm just telling you, I've been there. I was one of the 21 owners of the Grapevine, one of the 21 owners of the General Service Board, and one of the 21 owners of AA World Service. That's the way it is legally structured, that there is 21 people who are the owners of those individual nonprofit corporations. You can't take it with you when you leave. You can't sell your part while you're there. But that's the legal structure. The legal structure was meant for how we deal with the outside world. We need to not pay tax. We need to file taxes. We need to sign hotel contracts. We need to sign stadium contracts. Our legal structure was meant for how we deal with the outside world. And over the last 10 years, it's been weaponized to deal with the inside world and the groups and the areas. There is no separation, us and them, of the delegates and the trustees. The trustees are a small voting group of the General Service Conference. That's what they are. According to the charter and the concepts, they're responsible for the routine and ordinary business of those three corporations. Now, where I think, because I divide the concepts into four groups. Group one, traditions 1 through 5, the AA group's Bill of Rights. Group two, concepts 6 to 8, the complicated relationship between the General Service Board and the General Service Conference. Group three, concepts 9, 10, and 11, which is a narrative description of how work is carried out at the General Service Office conference level. And then group four, the great concept 12, which is the warranties of the General Service Conference, which is also, if you're into it, Article 12 of the conference charter. It's been there since the start. And, you know, these concepts put all the authority in the AA groups. That's who Bill and Bob left their authority to. In fact, Bill called the General Service Conference the permanent successors to the founders. And sometimes the triangle teeters. Sometimes the board takes too much authority and the conference bites back. Sometimes the conference micromanages and the board pushes back. But don't let anyone convince you that the conference is just like this 1 week a year gathering where we're supposed to rubber stamp everything the trustees do. It's just not. It's super important if you are a GSR that you know how your area looks at conference items. You know, some of these, let me just get rid of this and pull up the concepts a second. The most important concept in my mind to know for anybody is concept 6 for a lot of reasons. Everything lives and dies on concept 6. I'm going to start with my number one complaint about it, in that the short form of the concepts were created or written by an assistant editor of the Grapevine in the late 60s. And before we had the conference process we have now, the conference in like 1971, without it going through a committee, without it being on the agenda, approved the short form of the concepts. Hopefully someday that'll be corrected. But concept 6 is a tragedy in the short form. The short form is supposed to accurately describe the long form, not take away ever. And so the long form of concept 6 has two parts. I'll read them to you. On behalf of AA as a whole, our General Service Conference has the principal responsibility for the maintenance of our world services. And it traditionally has the final decision respecting large matters of general policy and finance. So remember what I just said. The first part, the General Service Conference is responsible for the maintenance of our world services. The whole conference, 93 delegates, 21 trustees, six directors, 15 voting employees, 135 people, that conference is responsible for the future of maintenance of our world services. And it goes on to further say, traditionally has the final decision respecting large matters of general policy and finance. But the conference also recognizes, part two, that the chief initiative and active responsibility in most of these matters should be exercised primarily by the trustee members of the conference when they act among themselves as the General Service Board. So I've been a trustee, I've been a director, I've been the chair of AO World Services. I know how much work it is during the year to keep this whole thing going, and you need some authority to do that. But for regular and ordinary business decisions, filing taxes, buying furniture, signing a lease for the building, regular and ordinary business, not AA policy. So I just read you part one and two that are in the long form of the concept. What did they do with the short form? They removed part one. The short form of concept six, the conference recognizes that the chief initiative and active responsibility in most world service matters should be exercised by the trustee matters of the General Service Board. How is it possible that the most important statement about the conference and their authority, which is in concept six, was taken out of the short form? But that really is the key to know when you go through these concepts. Concept one, the groups were given active maintenance of AA's world services. Concept two, we carry it out through electing a delegate. By the way, if you don't like your delegate, elect a different one. I'm so sick of hearing people in AA complain about what's going on at the General Service Conference. Then elect new or better delegates if you're unhappy with what's going on there. And by the way, it's those delegates that most likely are going to become trustees. Concept three, I'll tie to concept two, the right of decision. No one deserves a job in Alcoholics Anonymous. No one. You earn it. Concept nine, leadership skills. Just because you've been an alternate doesn't mean you're entitled or someone owes you a vote. We elect the best people at the time. But that right of decision, when you raise your hand to elect your GSR or your home group, you are essentially giving up your control of the General Service Conference. When you elect a GSR who doesn't participate or isn't going to really dive into the details, you are electing the same person who's going to elect that delegate. That's how it goes. And so many groups like want to elect the GSR like because no one else wants the job. Like it's probably time for AA to probably take a little responsibility and start sending GSRs that care. Start sending GSRs that show up. Or stop complaining. When people complain to me, I'm like, I don't know. Billy, did you hear they did this? I'm like, yeah. How did you not know? Oh, no, I didn't know about that. Well, does your group have a GSR? Does your group let your GSR report back at your group? Are you a recovery group or are you a group of Alcoholics Anonymous? And I know that sounds harsh, but what are you? If you're just a recovery group in the recovery world, call yourself that and have at it, and I totally support it. But if you're a group of Alcoholics Anonymous, you need a GSR who's showing up voting for a delegate in a DCM. Concept five, concept four is the right of participation. And I just want to stress for anyone who's new to service here, so you can hear and see when you read it why concept six is so important. That the General Service Conference is who maintains our world services. That large matters of policy and finance belong with them. Concept 4 says, throughout our conference structure, we ought to maintain at all responsible levels a traditional right of participation, taking care that each classification or group of our world servants shall be allowed a voting representation in reasonable proportion to the responsibility that they must discharge. God. I mean, I work in a complicated technical field, but I'm very good at explaining to people who don't have that technical ability. That's basically my job. We can't help that Bernard Smith was a lawyer and helped write the concepts. I mean, when I just read that, I mean, it sounds like, you know, sounds like we just filed a brief to get somebody off of death row, right? I mean, there's nothing easy about what I just read. But I want to break it down so that you understand it. We ought to maintain at all responsible levels a traditional right of participation. So here are the parts. Taking care that each classification or group, okay, who are those classifications? The delegates, the trustees, the directors, and the staff. When it comes to concept 4, there are 4 classifications that you can fit into as a voting member of the conference. And then it goes on to say, taking care that each classification or group of our world servants shall be allowed a voting representation in proportion to the responsibility that each must discharge. So, 135 voters, 93 area delegates. In the proportion that they must discharge, because Bill gave AA to the groups. So out of the 135 voters, the AA groups have 93 of those voters. Trustees have 21 votes, much smaller. Directors have 6. Staff have about 15. It is so important to understand that Bill left our general service structure to the AA groups. Listen, I came into AA young, so I have such a problem with getting older, but like, I came in to service with people who knew Bill. It's true. Michael Alexander was Bernard Smith's law clerk. He was a past chair of the General Service Board when I met him. Gary Glenn, Jim Estelle, the former head of the Texas prison system, Class A trustee. Elaine McDowell, another Class A non-alcoholic. Like, you are talking giants. And, you know, the one thing they always stress to me, and I'm very grateful, is that do not suffer the arrogance of believing that the board is the most powerful. Like, you have to believe that the groups really were intended to have the ultimate responsibility. Tradition 5 is our right of appeal, and, you know, just for the sake of history, I'll throw it out here, because we're in Georgia. Probably the greatest right of appeal letter ever written was written by a past delegate and past trustee from this area, Gay G. If anyone has never seen it, I'll gladly pass it on to you. Just see me after. I'll email it to you. But, you know, it says it's about grave issues, and she thought the grave issue was how we handled money in San Diego. And, you know, the right of appeal is not for everything. That's minority opinion. Minority opinion is for everything. But right of appeal is for appealing conference actions. And there might be something that needs to be changed there. Because you can't file a right of appeal, and neither can your area. The way the rules are written now is only someone who is below the area level or the conference level on the upside-down triangle can file an appeal with the conference. That's what it says. If you want to file an appeal, you have to submit a proposed agenda item to have somebody re-look at something. But if you've never seen Gay's letter, It's a thing of beauty, and it had a great effect in AA at the time, as much as some people did not like that she filed that appeal. But it's an important part to know in our concepts. The warranties are super important, and it wouldn't be respectful of me of you if I didn't have 2 hours to talk about the individual warranties. But they're super, super important. You know, when the conference charter was first written, what you couldn't change was the traditions in Article 12 of the conference charter. The conference couldn't change it. Only 75% of the AA groups registered could. That's how important Article 12 was of the conference charter, which is now Concept 12. The steps were added to that later on. But when the conference first started, the conference had the ability to change the steps. Now that is wiped away. There are certain things I'll just tell you, you know, regarding the conference that's coming. You know, there's a lot of things to take a hard look at. How trustees are elected from the region. That's a hard thing to take a look at. How the conference charter has changed. Just think about this for a second. Right now, you can't change the traditions unless you had 75% of the group's permission in writing, registered. And they have to be given 6 months to respond. That's a pretty tall order. Why don't I just change the conference charter? That doesn't require 75% to change. That just requires 2/3 of the conference members. I mean, how nuts is that? Sooner or later, we know what's going to happen. I mean, I would just ask you to look at the last 23 years of General Service Conference reports. Don't take my word on it. Look at them. Look at the agenda items submitted for the last 23 years. They're not about finding new ways to carry the message. They're about changing the message. The majority of them. No wonder we were so behind in technology. But, you know, I'm a big protector of the message, if it makes me sound old-fashioned. And I'm a kid who came here an atheist. But, you know, I'm not afraid to talk about real AA history. And the truth is, in 1909, at Clark University in Worcester, Massachusetts, if William James, who wrote Varieties of Religious Experience, did not run into Carl Jung, none of us would be here. That day, it's not even mentioned in our history. If there's two things missing from our history, it's William James meeting Carl Jung, and it's Bobby B. Those are the two things missing from our history. Hopefully, someday, I will proudly walk into the General Service Conference office archives, and there'll be a section honoring her. I mean, the letters that went out in the 40s at Christmas time. Love, Bill, Lewis, and Bobby. Bobby kept that office running 8 years. Bobby is responsible for, after the Saturday Evening Post article, when all those letters came in from around the country and the world, she's the one who worked 18 hours a day, writing back people, sending things around the world. She's the one who did all that work. And unfortunately, she suffered what happens to those of us who put things in front of our sobriety. And because of that, we wrote her out of our history. It's horrible. She's hardly even mentioned in AA Comes of Age. But AA is going to have to decide, like, what did William James tell y'all, Carl Jung? It was very simple. He said, people since the beginning of time have been having these things called vital spiritual experiences. They completely revolutionize and change people. They completely change people. But the problem is, they're as rare as getting struck by lightning. So that book that we all love so much, published in April of 1939, yeah, that's a recipe to get struck by lightning if you're an alcoholic. Not if you have alcohol use disorder, not if you're a binge drinker, not if you're a heavy drinker, like there are plenty of other ways to get better. If you're a real alcoholic, as described in the big book, like we only have one solution. We don't have a lot at AA. I hate to admit that, but it's true. We don't have a lot to offer. We have one thing. And yet it's the thing we seem to not want to talk about or be ashamed of or want to change. We have a spiritual experience as a result of the 12 steps. That's all we can offer to anybody. So if you're new to AA service or you've never heard about the traditions or the concepts, I just want to tell you that there's lots of great people probably where you live who can help you with these. And you don't got to make every sponsee an expert in the concepts. But I will tell you this. If you want to give a gift to Alcoholics Anonymous, don't take someone through the big book unless they agree to go through the traditions as well. Don't send uninformed people running around Alcoholics Anonymous. I was taught that you ask someone when they're going through the steps, are you willing to go to any lengths? Okay, if you are, then one of those lengths is going through the traditions. Because that's how much we need to care about Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, that's the only real way to get it done. And don't worry, like, I'm not worried about the groups that don't have a GSR. Would I like them to have one? Yes. However, I'm more interested in the groups that are electing a GSR, electing the right one. And the problem isn't electing GSRs. The problem is two very distinct things that happen in AA service. The amount of GSRs that are elected that never go to an area assembly. And how about this? The area GSRs that never return after their first assembly. Like, what are we doing to welcome people from service? Like, I don't want to just pick on the board. I'll pick on areas, too. We have these nice daises that look like my big fat Greek wedding with everybody sitting up on daises all over the country, right? We have all these things and everybody's important with a title and a this and a that. You know what an assembly is? It's like your day at work when you put a sign up in the kitchen, our regional vice president's coming next week. Clean your cubicle. Clean your garbage out of the refrigerator. Don't dress like a pig that day, right? That's what an area assembly is. That's what the GSRs are coming to that assembly. And that's how they deserve to be treated and welcomed and not like made like, oh, you don't understand something. Like, we need to do all we can to better orient GSRs. And I'm talking about, I've been to 87 out of the 93 areas, assemblies. I'm talking about everywhere. We just have to find a way. I live in an area now where if you are a newly elected GSR, you don't know that you don't have a hotel room for the assembly. Because the hotel room block has already been sold out for 2 months. Like, who tells them that? Like, now I have to go to an assembly as a new GSR and I don't know where I'm going to stay and no one told me that you got to call first thing Monday morning when the number opens. And I'm not saying that that's evil or bad. What I am saying is we got to do whatever we can to welcome people into the service structure of Alcoholics Anonymous and make them feel welcome. So that's it. I thank the convention for having me here today. Thank you very much. I don't know what we're closing with. I guess we're going to go with what's the usual manner for this convention? Oh, we have someone to close. Excellent.
I got a gift. You got to get a gift. You know you got to get a gift.
Thank you.